Stinson. Ms. Stinson's primary argument and only argument, assignment of error, assigns error to the trial court's denial of her motion to strike the evidence on the grounds that it was too far attenuated with no nexus regarding the manufacture of methamphetamine. Ms. Stinson was driving back with her friend, Mr. Comer, who also ended up being charged in possession and manufacture of methamphetamine. Police officers had come to Mr. Comer's house seeking to serve an arrest warrant, execute an arrest warrant. He wasn't there, but as they were there, Mr. Comer drove up in a brown vehicle with Ms. Stinson in it. Now, from the record, we know that the officers had information that Mr. Comer had been participating in the purchase of pseudoephedrine, which, as we know, goes into manufacturing methamphetamine. And Mr. Comer was up front with the officers when they asked him about that. He told them that he had methamphetamine in his pocket, and he also found a battery in his pocket, which is used to manufacture meth. And when they asked him where the bottle was, or his mobile meth lab, he up front told them that it was in the back seat of the car. When they asked Ms. Denson about the same circumstances, she did admit that she was a meth user and had used methamphetamine in the last couple of days on her camping trip with Mr. Comer. But she, and for purposes of this argument, the defendant will agree that the Commonwealth has established that she told the officer that she had purchased pseudoephedrine for Mr. Comer to manufacture methamphetamine in the past.
Well, actually, counsel, wasn't it specifically 2 weeks to a month prior?
Yes.
And weren't they actually on a camping trip, didn't she say, off and on for 2 weeks?
Well, the record's a little unclear as to exactly how long and whether or not they had come back to residence or back to town between.
There's no indication of where they went during the off and on, but there was an indication of an off and on.
Exactly.
So couldn't the court or the trier of fact, from that information, with the fact that Ms. Stinson actually rented the car and you had the, because if I understand your arguments, that there's no nexus between her purchasing the pseudoephedrine and the actual meth that was found in the back of the car. But couldn't the trier of fact conclude from the 2 to 4 weeks before that was purchased, the camping off and on, the use of a few days before, that in fact the meth container in the back could have been from the pseudoephedrine that she purchased?
It's our position that no, the court should not have made that inference. And the reason is because the conviction and the Commonwealth's charges were entirely based on circumstantial evidence. And when a charge or when the evidence against the defendant is entirely based on circumstantial evidence, the Commonwealth is required to eliminate all reasonable hypotheses of evidence that flow from that circumstantial evidence. Now, even with the circumstantial evidence that the Commonwealth had and the court considered, the circumstantial evidence was that she said, I bought it recently, you know, sometime in the past, but she was not aware that Mr. Comer had been manufacturing methamphetamine in the camping trip. Now, that in itself is circumstantial evidence that the Commonwealth now has to deal with, because from that flows that, well, perhaps she did not buy pseudoephedrine for this manufacturing.
But the premise that you just stated was an accurate statement of the law, but there are plenty of other cases which say that all that really means is that the government must prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to argue here is that did not rise to the level beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, why isn't she an accessory before the fact?
I'm sorry?
Why isn't she an accessory?
Well, because the Commonwealth cannot prove that her admission, if the court, which the court did, accept it as an admission and as evidence that it rests its conviction on, that even if she did buy pseudoephedrine in the past, it has no way of proving that pseudoephedrine that she purchased for Mr. Comer in the past was this pseudoephedrine that was used in this.
But I'm going to cite to the McGee versus Commonwealth case. It says, to be guilty of an accessory before the fact, the accused must either know or have reason to know of the principal's criminal intention and must intend to encourage, incite, or aid the principal's commission of the crime. And if we take Judge Malvo's facts, she's articulated that she's driving the car, she's in the car, she knows what the defendant's doing, she's a user, she's camped with him before, she knows everything that's going on. Why doesn't that necessarily meet the test in McGee?
Your Honor, the reason that, what I'm basing a lot of the argument on is that two things. First of all, there's no evidence that she knew that Mr. Comer was manufacturing methamphetamine on this campus. Now, she did admit that they used methamphetamine while they were camping. That doesn't mean that she knew that he was manufacturing on the trip. And that's a little different. That's two different tracks on the same, on two different questions.
Except for, can't the court make an inference in terms of the facts that there's an open container of meth in the back of the car that she rented?
And that's what I was getting to. And I encourage the court that hasn't already to look at the appendix and take a look at that picture. The picture introduced by the Commonwealth and submitted to the court as evidence of that meth, of that bottle, the bottle that was being used to manufacture, was the bottle was pretty small. It was the size of maybe a 1 liter soda bottle. And it was in a box in the back seat of a car that was, excuse my saying, filthy. It was littered with all sorts of gear that you might expect from a long camping trip or several days camping trip, plus just trash and all sorts of other things. It's entirely conceivable that Ms. Denson had no concept that Mr. Comer was involved in any sort of manufacture of meth on this camping trip. And if that's the case, which we argue that it is the case, she had no awareness of any manufacture going on while on this trip, just use.
But the trial court noted that the one pot was in plain view in the back seat.
In plain view, if you know what you're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking for, it looked like a dirty soda can. It looked like a dirty soda can.
But couldn't the trial judge's fact finder conclude that we've got a person who concedes that she's a meth user? And
yes.
So she should reasonably know what a one pot looks like.
Well, Your Honor, I think that we're all reasonably food eaters, but we don't all know exactly what goes into the manufacture and production of our food. We know essentially what some of the elements are.
That's a pretty good comeback, yeah.
I mean, we know essentially generally how things happen in the food industry and how things happen preparing our food, but most of us don't, and I would argue don't want to know what exactly goes into the manufacture and production. And the same could be true, and probably is true, with most, if not the majority of drug users. Most of them are not involved in the manufacture of meth. Most are involved in just the use of meth, or just their personal use of meth. Even if you're selling, it doesn't necessarily mean that you were the manufacturer of the drug itself. Now,
but if we, and again, and I appreciate you recognizing the principle of law that we must adhere to, if we're basically going to defer to the factual determinations made by the trial court and affirm the trial court unless its determination is clearly wrong, we all agree that the trial court specifically said that didn't find your client's testimony credible, basically because of the inconsistent statements that she made. You got the one pot in plain view according to the fact finder. You've got your client convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude, which then further undermines her credibility. Why, if we don't take all of those circumstances and add them up together, it makes a circumstantial case the Commonwealth suggested?
Your Honor, I'll concede that the evidence isn't great for our side, but I don't believe that it rises to the level of proof that is required for the reasonable doubt standard. And that's because there are still hypotheses of innocence that were left unaddressed by the Commonwealth's evidence, including the fact that she may have been helping Mr. Comer purchase pseudoephedrine for the manufacture of methamphetamine, but she might also have and likely did not know that this pseudoephedrine or the pseudoephedrine that she had purchased was going into the manufacturer recently or right before she was arrested.
But she does acknowledge that it's a main ingredient. I get your point that there's no way to connect it to this particular pot.
Sure.
Is what you're saying. But
that's exactly what I'm saying.
Your argument is makes sense in isolation, but if you're putting all the things together, then what occurs?
Judge, I still believe that you do not rise to the level where no rational fact finder, you rise to the level that a rational fact finder could have reasonably believed that this proves beyond a reason, believe that this proves beyond a reasonable doubt that perhaps she bought the pseudoephedrine from Mr. Comer in the past, but it was not part of this this manufacturing enterprise. I see the yellow lights on. That's 5 minutes, is that correct?
Good afternoon again, Your Honors. Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. It's the Commonwealth's position that the chapel is not planning wrong and finding the defendant guilty of manufacturing methamphetamine. This is a circumstantial evidence case, and there is a number of circumstances that point to the defendant's guilt in this case. We have to first start with the one pot meth lab that is in the back seat in plain view in the vehicle that the defendant had rented. It was, I will disagree a little bit with opposing counsel's characterization that it was in some sort of like box. It was in a clear tub right in the middle seat. If you look at the picture on page 33 of the appendix, it's right with the salt and pepper shakers, and the defendant had said that she and the other gentleman, Mr. Kohler, had been on a camping trip.
In terms of, I think what he's arguing about it is, she makes statements where she says, look, I know that pseudoephedrine is the main ingredient, but I don't know how it's made. His point is, there is not a link to that pot, even if she knows what that is, to the pseudoephedrine that she purchased previously.
Right. I mean, I would point to pages 23 and 25 of the appendix. Page 23 of the appendix, she said that she had purchased pseudoephedrine probably a couple weeks ago or a month. And then on page 25 of the appendix, she said she had been camping on and off a couple of weeks with the defendant. I think the reasonable inference is that she was purchasing pseudoephedrine for the defendant so that he can make methamphetamine. We know that they were using methamphetamine during the trip. We know that the defendant had methamphetamine on his person when he was stopped. We know that she had told the officer that she had purchased pseudoephedrine for the defendant, for the manufacturer of methamphetamine on previous occasions.
But the fact that she'd done it on previous occasions, does that provide the necessary link to hold her responsible for this occasion?
I think it does. I mean, I think when you look at the circumstances in their totality, and that's what the trial court said, based on all the evidence, I have no doubt that you were manufacturing methamphetamine. When you look at the fact that she told inconsistent statements about her purchasing, she told the officer one thing and then she testified to another. She also said that she, well, this is not an inconsistent statement, but she denied knowledge of the meth, the one pot meth lab in the back of the vehicle. The trial court, of course, had the opportunity to hear her testify and judge her credibility, and frankly did not find her testimony credible. I think when you add up all of the evidence in the totality, your reasonable fact finder could find that this defendant was manufacturing methamphetamine. Make sure I covered everything. I think so. Unless the court has any other questions, I just ask to affirm the judgment below.
No, thank you, Mr. Campbell. Mr. Bailey, you have 454 left.
I will take that. Thank you, Your Honors. Just want to make one point. Draw the court's attention to page 25 of the appendix that opposing counsel was referencing. On that same page, Ms. Denson testified to the court that she was not aware of Mr. Comer using methamphetamine on their camping trips. Now, she admitted that she used it twice while they were camping, but when asked about Mr. Comer using methamphetamine, she just said, no, I never saw him use methamphetamine. Now, I submit that's not what you would expect a defendant to say, who is lying about her involvement in the manufacture of methamphetamine. That defendant would be more likely to, and I know this is getting to the weight of the evidence, which the court has already determined, but I did want to point out that it seems to have been disregarded by the court as not the statement that you would expect a defendant to make, who is claiming that her charge for manufacturing meth was, should be all pushed onto an acquaintance or somebody else who was ill.
One might also suggest that the reason why she said that is she didn't want to throw her supplier under the bus.
That's a fair assessment.
I just wouldn't decide it.
It's not beyond the pale, but it just goes to another factor in the hypothesis of innocence. Now, what this comes down to is Miss Denson, she's an addict, but she may have just been in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong person, too. In fact, I think that's what the evidence establishes. She was camping, she was using, did not know that Mr. Denson was manufacturing in the back of the car with that small, dirty bottle. And while I agree that it wasn't a clear box in the middle of the seat, I would encourage the court to take a look at that picture because the seat is so dirty and so filled with other junk that it's hard to kind of distinguish anything that's back there individually unless you're looking for it and you know what you're looking for. Your Honors, I submit this is a case of wrong place at wrong time. There was no nexus between the pseudoephedrine that she admitted to purchasing from Mr.